Blog Talk Radio.
It's time to talk college hockey. This is USCHO Live from U.S. College Hockey Online at uscho.com. USCHO Live is brought to you by the USCHO Fan Shop at shop.uscho.com. For college hockey and college sports fan gear, visit shop.uscho.com. Be a part of the conversation. Give us a call now or message us on Twitter at USCHO. This is USCHO Live.
Good evening and welcome to USCHO Live for Tuesday, March 17th, 2015. I am alongside Jim Connolly. This is Ed Trefsker. Good evening, Jim.
Good evening, Ed. It's that time of year where we're talking about numbers and mathematical formulas and those things that none of us really want to deal with, but that is the reality. We are in conference tournament weekend, and there are a lot of mathematical formulas of who's going to make the NCAA tournament that I think have a lot of people hanging a little bit with bated breath.
Well, I think we can break it down in a more simple way and kind of tie it into the great hockey that's coming up this weekend. Before we dive in, though, I want to remind you, don't get left out in the cold this spring. Be there as the best of the best will compete for the title of national champion. Experience the NCAA Men's Frozen Four. Regional action drops the puck March 27th through 29th and continues April 9th and 11th at the Frozen Four in Boston. Experience it live as determination will make history. Visit ncaa.com/frozen4 to make a date with champions. Well, there are a few teams that have already punched their ticket. 16 spots are available, Jim, and 8 of those are locked up already.
Yeah, right now, if you're in the top eight in the pairwise, you are in the tournament. It's just a matter of math this year. This is not something that happens every year. There's not some automatic coming out of the quarterfinal weekend that does this. But the way that the math works out this year, North Dakota is in, and I believe, and I haven't seen this anywhere yet, but they are likely the number one overall seed, and I believe they are probably about a 97% lock on getting there. Minnesota State Mankato, or Minnesota State as more people know them, that's the number two team. Denver, Boston University, Michigan Tech, Minnesota Duluth, Miami, and Nebraska Omaha, all 8 of those teams have locked up their bid, despite the fact that 2 of those teams are gone from their conference tournament. That's Miami and just Nebraska Omaha. I believe Miami is still in it. So everybody else, they're still playing hockey at this point. Or is it Minnesota Duluth? I'm sorry. I realized as I made that statement that I don't really know
Nebraska
still locked
Omaha.
Or not.
That's the only one by St. Cloud State. We're going to be talking with St. Cloud head coach Bob Motzko, by the way. But I just wanted to update on number one seed. There are 3.1 million possible outcomes with the 26 teams left in to play this weekend. And out of those 3.1 million and change possibilities, North Dakota has a 76.7% chance of overall. And this is by way, courtesy of Jim Dahl. And Mankato, 23.3. So 3 out of 4, 75% chance for North Dakota, depending on what happens.
I believe they're in a situation, if they win one game in their conference tournament, they're probably 100% for that.
Yeah, I haven't seen the whole breakdown on that, but yeah, that's not necessarily the case.
This show's all about math, you know.
Oh yeah, I hope we don't get too bogged down in. If they don't win any game, they're 61.2% number one. If they win one game, they're 75% number one. So,
That's right. They play the maximum of 2 games with win and loss percentage, right? They have a consolation game in that league that they could actually lose 2 games this weekend.
That's correct.
Okay. So that would actually be part of the reason that they could move down, which it's all just, again, fuzzy math to me. I like to say that I understand the math behind it all, and I know that it just really comes down to where you are in those 3.1 million potential outcomes that are going into this weekend. And just a plug for our own site, if you haven't logged in and put in at least 100 scenarios into the pairwise predictor at this point, you are way behind the times.
Well, you know, it's interesting. We do have a combined results page that just shows you graphically what everybody's put in. And I know more than these scenarios have been tried, but people have duplicated some of them. So far, well, let me refresh it and update it to up to the minute. 7,385 different scenarios have been tried by people out of 3.1 million possible. But you can see where things fall. And the more they get in there, the more it falls with the numbers that have been in all of the possibilities. But in any
case,
I
do believe that in that, when you look at those, you know, 7,000 or so, and I know it's not an exact science, but it goes back to political polls. You can't poll everybody in the country, but once you get a certain demographic polled, and as long as you have a certain representation, that these numbers begin becoming a lot more accurate than they actually seem.
Right. Well, and in fact, one of the things that popped up very early on that Jim Dahl also shows up is there is a possibility for Boston College to be bumped from the tournament. They sit ninth in the pairwise, if I'm not mistaken, but they have a 99.2% probability of being able to make it in. And it's probably a higher probability than that because some improbable things have to happen. Basically, what has to happen is enough teams that would not be at-large bids need to win their conferences.
Right.
And enough teams need to move above that pushes them down in the pairwise. And I played with a couple of possibilities that made that happen. But, you know, Boston College, it's not mathematically 100%, but they're nearly a lock right now for the ninth spot.
Yeah, I mean, you're talking, 3.1 million outcomes of potential scenarios, and, 1% of that is 30,000. And that's that's a lot of combinations, but you're right. It involves a lot of upsets. And when we talk about upsets, we talk about teams that would not make the tournament, otherwise, unless they had won their own conference championship. So they wouldn't have qualified for an at-large bid. They weren't in the top 16 of the pairwise, 15, 14, 13. BC seems like they're going to be 12 or higher in the pairwise, so they would need somebody to bump them out of that spot if they're 12 or higher. There's
right.
about a 10% chance they fall below that to 13, 14, or 15, and then it becomes even a little more vulnerable. There's also the dynamic of when they do fall that low, who is winning to push them that low. I really think that they would, it almost feels to me that if one team or one conference can eliminate the fact of a huge upset, then that conference alone can probably take care of Boston College getting in. So if you're looking at the NCHC and you've eliminated those teams that really are bubble teams, and that really is just eliminating St. Cloud, then you've probably done everything you need. And actually, St. Cloud feels like they're going to get in as an at-large team as long as they win one game.
That's right.
So the NCHC might not even be the best example. It's probably the WCHA.
I would point to the Big Ten because...
Well, the Big Ten, if Minnesota wins their championship, anybody else is the most likely seed to unseat. But I think you have to have so many of them, Ed. I think you have to have the ECAC an upset with a Harvard or a St. Lawrence or somebody getting it.
I'll give you an example. I ran one scenario that had the lowest seed from every conference moving through, and that was enough to move Boston College out. But that meant Wisconsin, that meant
New Hampshire, Mercyhurst.
It meant New Hampshire. Yeah, it meant
Harvard,
Ferris State, and the WCHA. It was all the teams that had to win their conference tournament to get in, and that combination was enough to have fewer at-large bids, and also moved Boston College down, as you said, to number 13 in the pairwise. So that
I
there are some combinations.
I think if you eliminated Ferris State from the tournament, from their own conference tournament this weekend, you would probably qualify two or three teams right away just on that one loss. I'm not saying that definitively, but that's in my head and understanding this the way I understand it. That's probably about right.
Yep.
Because that is one of the big upsets that's out there, the potential for an upset. Harvard might be the other one, but the ECAC has a lot of a potential for upsets. So, there's a couple of teams out there that just that one loss would qualify Boston College and maybe a couple of other teams right around them, like maybe Providence or Quinnipiac, the teams that are right on the bubble.
Right.
I'm not making definitive statements, but teams that I feel like they're right in that kind of sweet spot that they have a really high chance of making it. Quinnipiac is one that really sticks out to me. Bowling Green really sticks out to me. Providence, because they don't have any more games to play. And it's a funny thing. If you've positioned yourself well heading into this weekend and you're not playing, Boston College and Providence are kind of in that category, you're almost better off. You don't have as much to lose. I mean, you really have nothing to lose because you're not playing any more games. You can't lose another game. So you can't really bump yourself down too much in the pairwise. You can just hope that the teams around you don't knock you out of the tournament.
Well, and there are only three teams that are not playing this weekend that have a chance to get in. And that's Yale, which has about a 4% chance.
Right.
BC, as we said, almost 100%, 99.2%. Providence has to have things fall its way. Meanwhile, bubble teams, and Jason Moy has laid this out well on her bracketology blog, Minnesota can still be an at-large selection without winning the Big Ten. Colgate, Harvard, and Quinnipiac all have a chance. UMass Lowell and Vermont have a chance at-large. St. Cloud State, as you mentioned, needs probably a win to make that happen. And Bowling Green and the WCHA can make it at-large without winning that tournament. But then everybody else needs to win to get in, including five of the six teams in the Big Ten. The only one who can get in without winning is Minnesota. Michigan, Michigan State, Ohio State, Penn State, and Wisconsin need to win the tournament to get in. And I'm sure that'll have a pretty big dynamic on that tournament.
Yeah, I guess that's kind of crazy when you really think about it. I mean, that is not what you're used to seeing in any conference tournament, except really Atlantic Hockey that's been there in many seasons, really all except one, I think, where I think it was Niagara was locked for an at-large bid. But for the most part, that's the only conference that ever sees that type of a scenario. Even the ECAC usually has a couple of teams that are locked in at getting into the tournament. Now, here we are heading into that weekend, and the only team that really feels like a lock in the ECAC at this point is Quinnipiac. Harvard and Yale, as you said, both in good position. They're both, Harvard's still playing. Yale is not.
Yale's not in a good position. They got about a 1-25 shot.
Well, but at least they're in a heartbeat scenario that they can actually get in. There are a lot of teams, St. Lawrence being one of them.
St. Lawrence, Colgate, and Harvard, they basically all have to win. Colgate and St. Lawrence have to win on Friday.
Yes.
And Harvard is going to be, it needs really everything
pretty
to fall its
out
way if they lose Friday.
Yeah, it's a lot of crazy scenarios right now. I just feel like this year that there's a lot of death sentences on Friday. If you lose your game on Friday, you're done. And there just seems like there's more of those than we've seen in past years. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe there's just more teams that are locks at this point, and not that, not to the point that, it doesn't matter if you win or lose. So if you lose, then you still have the prayer. I just feel like that, outside of Quinnipiac, they're 70% to make it if they lose on Friday, and Bowling Green is still 50% to make it if they lose. Everybody else is in just such a bad predicament. Boston College and Providence are the only two teams out of that bunch that still, they're not playing any more games, so they're still in good position. But everybody else is such a low percentage. St. Cloud, if they lose, they're only a 20% chance to win. And I think that they would have to then win their consolation game to have a chance to get in, because if not, I believe they fall below 500, if I'm not incorrect. Minnesota, they're only a 5% chance to make it if they lose as an at-large. Harvard, they're less than 1%. Colgate might be out. They're really low. UMass Lowell, they are definitely out. Vermont's out if they lose. So there's just so many of these teams that Friday becomes almost a death sentence for them, that if they don't win, they know their season is over. That's something that in this conference tournament, there's always a couple of those teams, but you usually feel like if you can make your conference tournament, you've put yourself on better footing. This year, that's not really the case.
Well, and the whole reason behind that is five of the spots are already locked up by the NCHC. So what that means is just about every conference tournament means something. And I'd rather have us looking to see who's going to win than looking at numbers and looking at pairwise all weekend. Let's look at some great hockey games. And so from that scenario, I like it.
Yeah, in that case, I think we have some really incredible tournaments left ahead of us. I am impressed with the teams that have made it there from every league. I think that when you look league-based, one league to another, you have the teams that, regardless of where they fell in the regular season, it feels like every league you have the teams that were playing the best hockey in their conference Final Four.
And there were some pretty great games. Again, overtimes, a plethora of overtimes. We talked about that last week. Harvard and Yale on Sunday night, we were watching that for the final game to conclude to get the pairwise predictor up and running. Also on Sunday, I was watching that Wild game that Mercyhurst and Bentley had with 9 minutes left. Bentley was up 2-0. Mercyhurst scores 2 goals in 14 seconds and then gets the game winner with 5.5 seconds left on the clock. Just a ridiculous series there, and certainly equally elating and deflating at the same time for those two teams.
That one was one that I was looking at it from afar. I was home and kind of following some scores, and I said, oh, Mercyhurst looked like they're done. And next thing, it looked like they were tied, and I said, oh, that's pretty good. Maybe we'll go to overtime. I'm waiting for it to go to overtime, and I said, oh, man, it's over already. Wow, that was a quick overtime. And then I realized they hadn't even gotten there, that they had won the game with 5 seconds left. Pretty incredible. And I had seen Rick Gotkin last week because he was right here in town. I'm in Waltham, and he was here, and he said he felt really good about the way his team was playing, and they played a really tight 1-0 overtime game the first night, and lost the middle game, but bounced back and really bounced back at the end. And the way they did so, you feel like that probably gives them a little bit of confidence going into the Atlantic Hockey Final Four this weekend up in Rochester. And if you're a league, and I'm not trying to sound like I have a bias in Atlantic Hockey because I hardly have that, but the commissioner has to be so pleased with the fact that he has geographically probably the four closest teams that he could put into Rochester.
Four of the five.
There.
The only one closer would have been
Niagara.
In that bunch would have been Niagara. But, four of the five were within 4 hours. Let's say 4 hours, 2.5 hours, 1 hour and 15 minutes, and 10 minutes of the arena. So
pretty incredible. I mean, if you're looking at, and this is a good measuring stick, I think, for Atlantic Hockey, they have to see what type of a crowd they draw this weekend. And they will know where they are at as a league. This is their probably closest to their max crowd they could get. If they substitute Niagara for Robert Morris, that's the only way they could probably get a bigger crowd. And that was actually, the funny thing is that was actually a possibility. But they will see where they are as a league, I think, this weekend when they look at the attendance at that tournament.
So, yeah, so that was a fun finish last weekend. And I don't know if there's anything else that really stands out for me last weekend. Certainly having seven series go to three games was a great thing. Union, we'll talk more about that with Brian Sullivan, our ECAC hockey columnist, as he'll join us in our third segment. But Union will not repeat. Did take Quinnipiac to three games. And those two losses are the first losses in the postseason under head coach Rick Bennett. But kind of a disappointing season for the Dutchman. And what a finish for Vermont to get that 1-0 win over BC. So and New Hampshire in overtime with Providence. I mean, those were some great games on Sunday.
Yeah, there was. There was a lot of fun hockey to watch. I was at UMass Lowell against Notre Dame, and the way that Notre Dame stormed back on Saturday in the second period, I really had some concerns of whether Lowell could have any chance of winning on Sunday. And not only did they win, but they scored 6 goals against a goaltender that has been outstanding. And it gives me a little bit of renewed confidence in the Riverhawks and their offense. So I think the Hockey East Tournament is putting four of very hot teams in their Final Four. And I think it can be said for almost any conference. The NCHC, you're talking about four nationally ranked teams in that tournament, and that's going to be very impressive. The WCHA has an unbelievably impressive field. So I think we're seeing some of these Final Four fields, and you're looking at it almost just like salivating as a fan to go to these games, because you know that you're seeing really the best teams that these leagues could have put possible. And especially the leagues like Atlantic Hockey, the ECAC, and Hockey East. If you have been a bottom team and you have survived two rounds of playoffs, some of these teams going three games in both rounds, you know your team is playing well, and that's a lot of fun to head to the conference Final Four knowing you have that type of confidence.
Well, Jim, it's time for us to take a break. We'll be bringing in St. Cloud State head coach Bob Motzko. His Huskies returned to the USCHO.com poll at number 18 and swept Omaha on the road last weekend to advance to the NCHC Frozen Faceoff. And he'll be joining us next when USCHO Live continues.
USCHO Live is brought to you by the USCHO Fan Shop at shop.uscho.com. For college hockey and college sports fan gear, visit shop.uscho.com. From U.S. College Hockey Online at uscho.com.
Get ready, Boston. The Frozen Four returns to TD Garden. Be there and experience it live. The top four teams in the country will compete for the title, but only one will make history.
Wow! Backhand save!
Become a national champion.
He buries it!
The 2015 NCAA Men's Frozen Four, April 9th and 11th at TD Garden in Boston. Tickets on sale now. Visit ncaa.com/frozen4 and reserve your seats today.
College hockey offers fast-paced action with the unmatched atmosphere of a college campus. Experience the passion and excitement as schools from across the country compete for the NCAA Division I national title. College hockey produces exemplary young men, including one-third of all NHL players, like Ryan Miller, Matt Molson, and Brian Gionta. Whether you're a fan of the game or a prospective player, nothing compares to the college hockey experience. Play it smart. Play college hockey. Visit collegehockeyinc.com.
This is USCHO Live.
Welcome back to USCHO Live. I'm Ed Trefsker along with Jim Connolly.
We were just talking about the conference tournaments in our opening segment and some of the upsets in the first round. And one of the upsets, and maybe in this conference there is no such thing as an upset in the NCHC right now, but St. Cloud in two games took out Nebraska Omaha, which has had just such a fantastic season to date. The Mavericks will still go on to the NCAA tournament, but St. Cloud State, they are headed to the big show this weekend in the NCHC. They will play number one North Dakota on Friday, and we're joined by their head coach, Bob Motzko. Bob, what an interesting season this has been for your team. What a ride, and in a good position that you're in going into this conference tournament.
Well, you guys can call it whatever we want to call it, but we're still playing, and that's the thing that's most important for us right now. And it has been an interesting season, but that's the good thing. It's just never got away from us. We've stayed right with it. We continued to get better, and we found our way here at the end of the year to get on a little run. And I'm not going to define run. We're just we're piling up a couple more wins than we did in the first half, and we're feeling pretty good about our season right now.
Well, right now that run is three straight wins, and two of them coming last weekend in a really tough quarterfinal series against a good Nebraska Omaha team on the road. You win in double overtime the first night, and then a 3-1 win the second night. Talk a little bit about that series and the ebbs and flows that kind of went into it.
Well, the Friday night, you got two teams that fill each other out a little bit that first game, and you play a little tighter to the vest. I'm going to give you a lot of it after we watch the game tape back. We didn't have a great night from some of the things that we want to try to do to put pressure on Omaha. They swept us in their building early in the year. We got them in our building for two a few weeks back. But we just kind of – what we did is we hung in there all night long, maybe a little bit like our season. We didn't have many great scoring chances. They got a shorthanded goal, and that was the only goal that they would get that night. And we hung around. We played a good defensive game. But lo and behold, it was actually in the overtime when we finally got comfortable, when we started to put some pressure on them in the first overtime. And you can tell when we got in between in the locker room there, between the second and the first overtime and the second overtime, we were starting to find our game. We started to get more comfortable. And why it took so long, we'll never know. David Morley scores the big goal on that Friday game. It's maybe a classic, well-battled defensive win that we got in game one, that we had to battle it along. We were out there a long time, but it was going to be an ugly goal that got in, a little deflection and the tip and a shoulder and a rolled up over, and somehow it ended up in the back of the net. And that was the important, obviously, get that first win is the important one in a best two out of three series.
You then go into Saturday night's game, and you grab the lead. And I think that sometimes when you look at playoff hockey, leads are so important. And you get that 2-0 lead, and they finally get a goal in the third period pretty late, and you respond with a goal of your own. The momentum, how much did that overtime, that double overtime win carry in terms of momentum, and how much did you really just, as a team, really have to start over?
The momentum, no question, carried over. But then watching the film, one of the things that I thought Omaha was dictating a lot of the pace. They were really trying to, put a lot of pressure on our defense. They were exerting a lot of energy. We did a good job defending, but I thought that we were going to have the fresher legs because and maybe the bad thing is I didn't think we wasted a lot of energy. We didn't put much pressure on them. And I thought that played well the next night. And it started with us, I believe, the first shift of the game on Saturday night. We got the puck deep. We put a lot of pressure. We had good – our knees were bent. And it rolled right into our next couple shifts. And you just felt good about how we were going to play that night. Our guys responded in a much better fashion. I think we snuck the game out Friday. Saturday, I thought from start to finish, we had great legs. Momentum, score the first goal. We did, we did get the big power play there when one of their leaders went out on a hit from behind, and we get the 5-minute penalty and power play, and we score. The bad news is Kosla went down. He played two more shifts, and then he was out for the game as one of our top players. So you had two of the better players in the game go down, but we do get the 1-0 lead. But I like the way we played. Great energy, put a lot of pressure on them the rest of the night. They got strong goaltending. I mean, there were a number of times we could have extended that lead. And then Nick Oliver, our captain, and really our seniors were outstanding for us. They're a pretty battle-tested group. And a huge win for our program. We lost the first round last year, resurrects this season, keeps everything alive, and we move forward.
We're talking with Bob Motzko, head coach of St. Cloud State. His team will be heading to the Final Four of the NCHC this weekend, and they will be playing North Dakota on Friday. Talk a little bit about your team and some specific players here, Bob. Looking at Johnny Brzezinski, and he's a guy that I think people have known. He has a lot of talent, and he's a guy that is probably going to be in the talk for some of the Hobie voting, and Joey Bennick, I think with his numbers too, the two of them have such a fantastic season. What has your offense been like in terms of morphing into the team you want it to be?
Well, that's, you know, there's no secrets now late in the year. That's been probably the thing that's slowed us a bit is we – David Morley has had a real strong second half for us, and with the two guys, Brodzinski and Bennett, that you mentioned. Cali Coastal has battled an injury all year. He has 90 points, in his, almost 90 points in his first 2 years with us, and he's really battled injuries all year long. He's just getting healthy right now, back to the top of his game, and it took darn near a little over three quarters of the season for him to get back on top of it. You know, we guys are hot. That's when our offense goes. Our power play has stayed strong. We've been one of the better power plays in the country all year. And we kind of got a mixed bag after that. And, you know, Patrick Russell, young freshman's had a real solid year for us. We've had to mix around a couple different centers. Joe Raykamp, a senior, has gone from center on one of our lines. He played on the line with Brodzinski for a month. And there was another great one. Joe had three goals in his first 90 games of college hockey. Eight games with Johnny Brodzinski, he had 9 points and four goals in there. And that tells you a little bit about John, but playing with him. But Joe's had a tremendous season for us. And we've had to have that. We've had to have Blake Winicky, another freshman, has found his way the second half, playing bigger minutes for us, got a few big goals for us. Jimmy Murray not having the year he had a year ago. And we go by our big couple guys that lead us, and the rest of the guys have to chip in. And more consistently, that's what's been happening the second half. Our offense has started to get maybe get some traction and start moving forward. Where, you know, our numbers from the outside don't look as bad, but that is one of the reasons that we lost a lot of tight games this year where we were short on the offense. But it's there. We got to keep the game close to the vest, and we've got enough guys that can pull through in the end for us.
Well, and on the backside, having Charlie Lindgren in goal, his numbers, you know, a .920 save percentage, I think, says enough about a goaltender that he's seeing the pucks and he's stopping them, put whatever goals against average. And I think a 2.27 is a very strong goals against average these days in college hockey. What has his contribution been like to really stabilizing your team when maybe those numbers aren't there up front?
Well, I'll tell you, that's probably the number one question that's answered that we had going into the season that we've been able to answer. Ryan Farragher signed with Anaheim last year after his junior year, played over 2,000 minutes. You know, Charlie had maybe, you know, four games last year, five games he played for us, did a great track record. But we're turning those 2,000 minutes over to a new goaltender. And here we are toward the end of the season, and this kid's a winner. And we couldn't be more pleased, and that question has been answered. That he's a gamer. He wants the big moment. He's just got the fire in his belly. He's competitive, and I think that's what every coach is going to want to tell you about their goaltender is that he wants to be in the net. He wants all the big minutes, and we've watched him grow and really develop into a true number one goalie at our level. And we're pretty fortunate. He's just a sophomore. So we really like our goaltending, and that was the number one question starting the season, but it's been answered, and I think that's the greatest thing you can say about a young goaltender is he's our number one guy. The team has complete faith in him, and I think this kid's a big timer, and he's just got a great presence about him. He wants to be in there in the big moments.
We're talking to Bob Motzko from St. Cloud State, and Bob, we're looking at the schedule, and more interestingly, the pairwise ranking, and your team, one game above 500, but you're very close to being a lock for this NCAA tournament. And I think a lot of people would say that's because they had such a strong non-conference schedule. And I look at it, it's a strong schedule. But at the same time, the NCHC itself has carried its weight in the non-conference play, and that seems to be leveraging your conference for an unbelievable positioning going into this NCAA tournament. Just talk a little bit about that and how the conference is really just carrying the water for every single team in it.
Well, you know, it's only year two. I think a lot of people anticipated that this could be a very strong hockey conference, and everybody's waiting, what are we going to do to each other? Are we just going to beat each other up and knock each other out of the tournament? And we do play the 24 game schedule, so we've got 10 non-conference games. And so it's too early to tell. You know, last year we weren't quite as good. Was this just a good year? And obviously that question, but is it going to continue? You never know. But, you know, we did do very well non-conference. That's the proof of it, why we have five teams that are locked and us right there on the bubble. We helped ourselves. We went 5-5 in our non-conference, but playing Minnesota, Quinnipiac, Colgate, Bemidji. I mean, it was a very strong non-conference, and we were able to split on all our series. So we didn't lose any ground, and then a lot of those teams are still doing well. So it's helping us here at the end. But the real thing for us in the pairwise, I can be simple with that. Yes, we've been there a lot of, you know, it seems we've been very fortunate that we've been in that thing a lot in recent history. But this year, we're not watching anybody else. We need to win. And that's what it was 3 weeks ago. Our only chance to get in the tournament is we had to win. We put ourselves in a good position. Here we are going into the last weekend, and we need to win. And it doesn't matter if we take care of business on our own. We're gonna seal our own fate to get into the tournament. We don't have to watch anybody, and that's why I have paid very little attention this week because we have just one mission. It's we got to go out and win, and we would love to take care of that on Friday night.
Yeah, it does look like Friday night, if you guys win that game, almost a lock to get into the tournament. You're going to face North Dakota, a team you beat way back in November. There's been some losses in there as well. But what's the matchup really for your team about against North Dakota?
Well, one, we're very familiar with each other. When we were in the WCHA together, we were partners, so we traveled with each other. We played each other four times every year. We had to play, I believe it was three or four times in our conference championship. So we're very familiar with each other, and we just played a few weeks ago, so there's no secrets. You know, your special teams have to dictate and be a huge part of the game if you're going to have success. You know, they play a very stifling defense. They're outstanding with their goaltender, with McIntyre, who's just had a terrific season. And I think it's the best defensive core I've seen in my, you know, the 14 years I've been, you know, coaching against North Dakota now. I think it's the best defensive core they've had. And you have to find a way to put pressure at points of the game. You're not going to do it all the time because they're so darn good. But we have got to have a forecheck established. We do have to try to force them to make some mistakes. And when we've done that, we can find ways to break the armor and get in there. But the big thing, we're confident. We know we know what we have to do, and they know what they have to do. And we know we're going to have a heck of a crowd. Just sets up for a great hockey game.
Well, it should be a great weekend of hockey in the NCHC across all conference tournaments. But I think I look at that conference tournament and how strong all four participants are. Bob, we appreciate your time. Bob Motzko from St. Cloud State. We wish you the best of luck this weekend, and hopefully we'll get to talk to you down the road in the national tournament.
All right. Thanks for having us on tonight. Appreciate it.
That's Bob Motzko from St. Cloud State. You can watch his Huskies take on North Dakota 4 o'clock Central Time on CBS Sports Network this weekend, this Friday. We'll be back to talk with ECAC hockey columnist for USCHO.com, Brian Sullivan, when USCHO Live continues.
USCHO Live is brought to you by the USCHO Fan Shop at shop.uscho.com. For college hockey and college sports fan gear, visit shop.uscho.com. USCHO Live from U.S. College Hockey Online at USCHO.com.
In 50 feet, turn left. Why are are you driving so slowly?
After a few drinks, I'm taking it slow.
Well, you're not fooling the cop behind you.
What?
Get ready to pay in 0.1 miles.
Getting pulled over for buzz driving could cost you around $10,000 in fines, legal fees, and increased insurance rates. Nothing kills a buzz like getting pulled over for buzz driving, because buzz driving is drunk driving. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
Get ready, Boston. The Frozen Four returns to TD Garden.
Score!
Be there and experience it live. The top four teams in the country will compete for the title, but only one will make history.
Wow, backhand save!
Become a national champion.
He buries it!
The 2015 NCAA Men's Frozen Four, April 9th and 11th at TD Garden in Boston. Tickets on sale now. Visit ncaa.com/frozen4 and reserve your seats today.
The traditional light bulb, a groundbreaking invention in 1879. It's time we switch to longer-lasting Energy Star light bulbs. They're more efficient than the old bulbs, like a text message is more efficient than a carrier pigeon. And they cut down on our energy costs. Because in our own groundbreaking age, we deserve a light bulb that saves us some cash. Saving energy saves you money. Learn more at energysavers.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Energy and the Ad Council.
This is USCHO Live.
And we're back with USCHO Live. Jim, our next guest is going to be part of our crew for USCHO at the Frozen Four in Boston, and he covers ECAC hockey year-round for us at USCHO.com, and that's Brian Sullivan.
And I always love talking to our own guys as much as we possibly can. And Brian, you have seen some decent and very good hockey in recent years. This year, decent hockey, I think, throughout your entire league. And some teams that I'm going to say maybe surprised a few of us out there that watch on the national stage and no more than the team you used to cover, and that's Harvard. And they have made it all the way to Lake Placid. Start with the Crimson. What do you like about this team right now?
What I like more than anything else is that they seem to be getting healthy again. It seemed as though I hate to sound like an apologist, although that's probably the way it's going to come off. It seems in retrospect as though their struggles this winter in 2015 have been due in large part to their injuries, especially on the blue line with Patrick McNally, who is far and away one of the best puck-moving defensemen in the league, if not in the East. And his return against Yale was not only surprising, but it was a huge boost to them as well. He knocked a goal and an assist on the weekend, and there were a couple of big ones in moving Harvard past a team that they hadn't beaten in three tries all year during the regular season. I do like the team, although every time I feel myself sliding one way or another on how I feel about them, they go completely the opposite direction. So I don't really know what to do with the Crimson anymore. Every year they come in loaded. Every year it looks like, the sky should be the limit for them. And yet every year they find a new way to not quite get there. So I'm not really sure what to make of them this year. They're back in the ECAC Final Four for the first time in a little while. And it'll be really interesting to see what they bring to the table against a very good and very surprising Quinnipiac team.
Yeah, Brian, you mentioned McNally. I think that was a huge gain back, but Colin Blackwell coming back just right before the tournament and playing so well in that quarterfinal round, he seems to be a guy that maybe nobody even understood whether they'd ever see him again this season, and here he is like dominating the game. Is this a team that when they're healthy, they could be as dangerous as any team, not just in the ECAC, but in the nation?
I'd love to say yes, but I feel like I've been burned by Harvard so many times. I mean, like you said, I used to cover them when I was living in Boston. I used to go to pretty much every Harvard home game that I could just in order to see the other more far-flung ECAC teams as much as anything else. But I mean, look at what they did in the first half of the year, and they were getting number one votes. They were number one in the pairwise early on. There is no reason why they don't have the capability to get back there again, whether they'll actually be able to pull it together in crunch time. The Yale series was the first time they have won on anything resembling a big stage so far this year. They crashed and burned at Madison Square Garden against Yale in a non-conference game. They crashed and burned in both Beanpot games. Well, crash and burn might be an overstatement, but they certainly didn't play up to their potential. And again, you know, health was a factor. You know, maybe a little bit of schedule burnout was a factor, but the team's got the pieces. The team has played to that level. If they can do it again, if they can do it consistently enough to make a real run, yes. Will they? Who knows?
We're talking with Brian Sullivan, who covers the ECAC, and maybe is not as high on Harvard as everybody else seems to be getting these days. One guy I want to talk about there, and we haven't mentioned his name yet, is Jimmy Vesey, and he's now leading the nation in goals with 27. It seems like not only a legitimate Hobie candidate, but maybe even a Hobie hat trick. And am I far stretching with the guys like Jack Eichel out there to say that Vesey could win the Hobie?
Could he? I don't think this is a year for him. I mean, I know he has had a great year. It's really, really tough, even for me, to see anybody but Eichel winning it. Eichel has kind of run away with things in every sense. But Jimmy Vesey is a very, very, very competent player. And he's one of those guys who puts up big numbers, even though everyone knows he puts up big numbers. He still kind of does it in a quiet way. He'll score, and maybe that, you know, comes with playing in the ECAC or playing for Harvard. He has a way of scoring goals and accumulating points without ever really, like, showing off. He doesn't play like a superstar. He just plays like someone who's going out there and doing his job. It's a very workmanlike kind of play out of Vesey, and I definitely think that he has the capability of playing on the next stage, playing the NHL. He is a Nashville draft pick, and he may very well be playing in a Predators uniform next year with any luck. Does he have a chance at winning the Hobie? Sure. Do I think that he is going to win the Hobie? Is he a top contender? It's going to be tough to beat Eichel this year.
Vesey, though, leads the nation in scoring without scoring a hat trick. I think in goal scoring, I think that alone is a pretty impressive statement, but I agree with you on Eichel. I'm going to turn it over to Ed because he certainly wants to talk more about Quinnipiac.
Well, Quinnipiac, I think you mentioned them as being a bit surprising. They took a three-game series against Union, a team that most of the folks out there thought was going to do a lot better this year. What's going on with Q, and how does Rampagnol keep it going?
Well, Quinnipiac's an interesting case. I find it funny from the reporter's standpoint because even Rampagnol, who is certainly not one to shy away from bluster every now and again, you know, he certainly is a very good spokesperson for his university and for his program. But even he was saying for at least half the year, maybe even the first two-thirds of the year, that his team was young. 18 of their 27 rostered players are freshmen or sophomores. And he admitted on numerous occasions early in the year that he thought his team was overachieving. Toward the end of the year, the record never corrected itself, if you will. They never really leveled off. They just kept winning. And he said, you know, maybe even he underestimated the team that he has. At some point, the record is, you know, the team is as good as the record is. And Quinnipiac has been able to put together a very strong season. Michael Gartig has gotten incrementally better in goal as the season has gone along. And again, this is a team that has a number of players who have made it to the national tournament, to the Frozen Four, despite the huge losses they've had in recent years. You know, whether it be, the Twins last year, whether it be, they just had a whole slew of guys who have either left early, gone pro, graduated, who put up monster numbers over the last two or three years.
We also mentioned Union. Those were the first two losses in the postseason under Rick Bennett. The media and the coaches and the USCHO poll had them number two in ECAC hockey, number two in the country. What happened there with Union?
Union lost a true linchpin player in Shane Gostisbehere's beer last season. And nobody wants to say that the loss of one player is going to doom a team. And I'm not saying that's exactly what happened, but I think that his impact and the impact of the other seniors on the team was massive. It was a young team without a whole lot of proven returners. They ran into some bounces. They ran into some injuries. They're in the kind of things that every team will run into, except they didn't really have the proven depth to overcome it. And so they really ended up being a somewhat mediocre middle-of-the-pack ECAC team by the end of it.
We're talking with Brian Sullivan, our ECAC writer for College Hockey. We talked about a little bit about Quinnipiac and Harvest and each other in the finals on Friday. But the other side of that draw, Colgate, St. Lawrence, two of the York teams. What are those two teams kind of bring into that game? I think a lot of people, they know both teams are pretty good. They don't really have a lot of expectations. Maybe I'm overstating that when I say that more as a national guy than an ECAC guy.
I hate to say you're a little bit fuzzy on me right now, and maybe that's my cell phone connection and not yours. Were you asking about Colgate or St. Lawrence?
Colgate, well, kind of the matchup.
Oh, okay. You're better now. Thank you. It's going to be a really fun game to watch. I can already tell. First off, St. Lawrence is going to be the default home team, being by far the closest team to Lake Placid. But that is almost literally an elimination game for both teams. The odds of either team losing and making it to the NCAAs are just insignificantly slim. Colgate has, again, kind of turned it around to the point where they are they're playing with the consistency and the depth that people were hoping they would coming into the year, but they never really turned it on and started blowing people away the way that it looked like they would given what they had returning from last season. St. Lawrence, obviously backed by goaltender Kyle Hayton, who I would argue is the best goaltender in the country. Despite the fact that he's a freshman, there's just no arguing with the numbers. If they can stick to their game and they can really start to frustrate Colgate over the first period and a half, there's absolutely no reason why St. Lawrence couldn't pull it out. And they're going to be a really, really, really tough out, whether it's going to be Friday night, Saturday, or into the NCAA should they make it.
Brian, I'm going to put you on the spot. One last question. Who do you think walks away from Lake Placid with the win?
I knew you were going to ask me. I've known all day you were going to ask me, and I still don't have a good answer. I think the wild card is Quinnipiac, even though they're the number one seed. It's going to be a matter of do they play to the level, you know, with the diligence and the work ethic and the consistency that they've been playing with most of the season. They are young. This is their biggest game. They are absolutely capable of taking it. I think the best team is Harvard. I think they have the most depth. They have the most firepower. Steve Michalik is a truly impressive figure in net. And he's not exactly a fifth-year senior, but he missed a year after that controversial Harvard academic scandal. And as a Minnesota Wild draft pick, he's got a new goalie coach, and he's putting up some really good numbers. Harvard's the best team. Whether they'll be able to pull it together, I'm not going to put money on it, but I think if I had to pick one, it would be the Crimson.
Well, there you go. That's Brian Sullivan, ECAC hockey columnist for USCHO.com. And, Brian, I know you're going to be part of our team of writers covering the Frozen Four in Boston, and I know Jim and I are both looking forward to working alongside you again this year.
Yeah, I can't wait. I've missed one or two years here for a number of reasons, but not only the fact that it's close to home and the city that I've lived in for 13 years, there's just so many reasons why I'm really excited to be back in Boston and excited to be back working for Ustro covering the Frozen Four again.
All right, thanks, Brian. That's Brian Sullivan from USCHO.com, and we'll be back to wrap up this week's episode right after this.
USCHO Live is brought to you by the USCHO Fan Shop at shop.uscho.com. For college hockey and college sports fan gear, visit shop.uscho.com. USCHO Live from U.S. College Hockey Online at uscho.com.
College hockey offers fast-paced action with the unmatched atmosphere of a college campus. Experience the passion and excitement as schools from across the country compete for the NCAA Division I national title. College hockey produces exemplary young men, including one-third of all NHL players, like Ryan Miller, Matt Molson, and Brian Gionta. Whether you're a fan of the game or a prospective player, nothing compares to the college hockey experience. Play it smart. Play college hockey. Visit collegehockeyinc.com.
The Frozen Four returns to Boston.
He buries it!
Be there and experience it live.
Score!
April 9th and 11th at TD Garden in Boston. Tickets on sale now. Visit ncaa.com/Frozen Four and reserve your seats today.
This is USCHO Live.
We're back with USCHO Live. I'm Ed Trefsker with Jim Connolly. And Jim, six tournaments going on this weekend. Let's start out in chronological order. Things start out with the Big Ten. All six teams play together this year at the Joe Louis Arena in Detroit. Ohio State and Penn State, Wisconsin and Michigan. Out of that first round, who do you like?
That is a really tough one. I think Michigan should get by. I think Penn State goes with them, and you know, and I think it then becomes really the best four teams in the league. I don't know if Ohio State can win. That's the one game I think might be a possibility, but I really do believe that Penn State and Michigan should advance to the finals.
Next on Friday, the rest of the leagues kick into place. It's a Final Four in all of those, although the NCHC will have a consolation game, a third place game. RIT and Canisius in the late game, Mercyhurst and Robert Morris in the early game. I'm going to go out on a limb. Well, I'm going to also show some bias. I'm going to pick the lower seed in each of those games, and I'm looking for an RIT Mercyhurst final with the Tigers on almost home ice coming out of that league.
Yeah, I think I'm with you on at least the teams that get to the finals. I think Mercyhurst has this kind of cardiac kids mentality in them, and I actually don't love the way that Robert Morris finished their season. I think that they are a vulnerable team. Now, at the same time, I think they could walk through that tournament too. They have the talent, they have the ability to, you know, maybe win a 4-0, 5-2 games back to back and totally prove me wrong. But I think I'm with you. I don't have such a pick on the final. I just don't have enough of a pulse on those teams to know where they are on the final, but I'll take your word that RIT can win it on home ice.
The thing that's happened with the Tigers is the power play, which has been anemic all season, is finally clicking, and that has been the missing piece of the puzzle.
Yeah, and that was one thing when I saw them play at the Mariucci that I was kind of unimpressed by. The puck movement on the power play was something that really concerned me at that point. So if they can kind of get that going, if that is something that continues to click, then I think they could be pretty formidable in terms of an opponent.
Harvard and Quinnipiac and Colgate and St. Lawrence, we just talked about with Brian Sullivan. Man, I am stumped on that one. Those I could imagine two four overtime games on Friday night. And I hate to hate to wish that on the ECAC because they have so many. But this has got to be the toughest of all the series to really pick. I don't know. I think Brian's got a kind of a good gut feel about Harvard, but you can't look past anybody else in that whole matchup either.
Yeah, I love Harvard. I've loved Harvard the whole year. I've seen Harvard play. I've seen Quinnipiac play, and I've seen them play against the similar teams. And Harvard would dismantle a team, whereas Quinnipiac would find a way to make it an interesting game and maybe even lose. So I know that Quinnipiac came out on top of their league. They were playing unbelievable hockey down the stretch. But the fact that they needed three games against Union gives me some pause. And the fact that they were down, they could have been done in that series in two games. So I'm going with Harvard there. And on the other end, I don't have a good feel between St. Lawrence and Colgate. I think that St. Lawrence probably is the better team. And as you heard Brian say, they seem to have the better goaltender. And I think goaltending goes a long way this time of year. So I'll go with a Harvard-St. Lawrence final. And, God, I don't like picking these finals. I'm really about getting just to the finals. I'm going to pick Harvard. I'm going to go with Brian Sullivan. What Sully says, I'm going to go with. I think that Harvard, I saw them play in the first round. I thought they were playing unbelievable hockey. I think they have the confidence. They can do it. Harvard wins that one.
We turn to Hockey East, the league you see the most. New Hampshire's won 9 out of their last 10, and it was only a one-goal loss in the second of three games at Providence against the juggernaut that is Boston University.
I'm really nervous for BU in that one. New Hampshire is, it lined up that BU should have played New Hampshire in the quarterfinals if all the favorites won in the first round in the first week. That didn't happen, and here BU is playing them in the semifinals, which they probably hate more. I think they would have rather have taken them in a best-of-three series where you can get a couple of chances and you can have one bad game out of three. I'm concerned for BU. This is a tough game for them. UNH is playing so well. Their goaltender has been pretty strong. I think they have the better of the two goaltenders. But it comes down to BU's first line. If you can't shut down BU's first line, forget about it. If New Hampshire gives up 5 goals to that first line, they're going to lose 5-4, probably maybe 5-3. So I really think that UNH could pull off the upset here, but I still will probably end up picking BU here.
The other game, Vermont and UMass Lowell, 3-game series, the Catamounts prevailed over Boston College, and then a wild 3-game series with UMass Lowell and Notre Dame, kind of swinging wildly back and forth. You've seen Lowell all year. Your thoughts on that matchup?
I think that Lowell has the better overall team and probably the better overall offense, and they're going to really threaten. But it's a weird thing sometimes when goaltenders become a factor in the playoffs. And Mike Santaguita was the guy that Vermont rode all year. Even at one point, suspending Brody Hoffman and making it look like he wasn't going to play, he had had kind of an outburst when he got pulled from a game this year. They put him back in last weekend. They had, I think, used him one time between the time he was suspended and reinstated in last weekend. They put him in last Friday night when they were down 4-0. He played very well. It became a somewhat close game. Then they gave him 2 more chances, and he stole a series. So I get nervous when I see a goaltender come in a situation like that playing that well. That said, Lowell just faced another goaltender like that. His name was Cal Peterson, who had set the NCAA saves record against UMass a week earlier, and then Lowell shelled him for 13 goals in 3 games, including a 5-spot and a 6-spot. So it's hard. That's a hard one for me to predict. I don't think that Lowell has the goaltending that Vermont has. I think that Kevin Boyle plays well for Lowell, but Vermont probably has the edge in goaltending. I think Lowell has every other edge in that series, so I'm going to give a slight edge to the Riverhawks there. I don't think that they're going to dominate, but they are supposed to win that game. Whether they do, that's another thing.
And overall, BU the odds-on favorite?
That's BU's tournament to lose. They're dominating right now. They're playing such good hockey. But in a single game scenario, it's the basketball scenario, as I call it. Like, one game is just so dangerous to play in any sport, especially hockey. You see a 7-game series in the NHL where the 8 seed can beat the 1 seed. So one single game, you never know what's going to happen. I don't love those odds for anybody. So I'm going to say it should be BU, but don't forget Lowell hasn't lost a game at the Garden, and has only given up one goal in four games at the Garden in the last 2 years. So you're talking about unseating the reigning two-time champion. That's one of the harder things to do. If there's a team that can do it, it's Boston University.
NCHC is going to be at the Target Center in Minneapolis. Hockey East, I should mention, on NESN and NBC Sports Network. CBS Sports Network has the NCHC from the Target Center in Minneapolis. The early game has number 18 St. Cloud versus number 1 North Dakota. Back on November 21st, St. Cloud at home beat North Dakota 3-1. Two of those power play goals, lost the other three games to North Dakota. It should be the edge to North Dakota, but St. Cloud State has got some momentum going in too.
Maybe. I don't see North Dakota losing that game. As much as I like St. Cloud, and we just had Bobby Mosco on, I think he does a great job with that team, and they have come out of some very tough series with a lot of splits this weekend. This isn't a series. This is a single game. I just think that North Dakota can get up. I think North Dakota should really walk away with the whole thing, to be honest with you. I think that that's how good North Dakota is and how well they are playing right now. And you heard Bob Mosco talk about how solid their defense is. That's just a deadly team. If they don't come out of the NCHC, I don't even care about talking about the other game. That's how much I think that they will dominate. They should walk away with that tournament. They are playing such good hockey right now. I don't care how competitive that league has been. North Dakota should win that tournament.
The other matchup is Denver and Miami. Whoever wins that one faces whoever wins in your saying odds on for North Dakota. There'll also be a consolation in there. And for St. Cloud, should they lose to North Dakota on Friday, they will need to win that third place game against either Denver or Miami on Saturday in order to make the NCAA tournament, because otherwise they'd have a record below 500 and would not be admissible as an at-large.
Yeah, we got to say the right word, not just to make the NCAA, to stay eligible for the NCAA tournament, because you have to have a 500 or better record. They're one game above, so if they lost two games, this consolation game is now kind of looming large. I still don't know why these darn things are played, but it's looming large for St. Cloud. I think St. Cloud would almost be in the tournament if there wasn't a consolation game that they could lose and probably still get in. So if they win the consolation game, if they lose against North Dakota, I think their odds are incredibly good. I'm not positive when I say that, but I think they're a lot better. They've just their RPI is so strong right now, despite the fact that they're one game over 500. I think that they just have to make sure that they don't drop two this week, and if they do, they're in dire circumstances.
Lastly, back at its old traditional home, the Xcel Energy Center in St. Paul, Minnesota, the WCHA tournament, unranked Ferris State versus Minnesota State and Bowling Green versus Michigan Tech. You got to love how the WCHA has competed and how it's had a couple of teams in the top five all season.
Yeah, it's likely they're really likely to get three teams in the tournament. Two is a possibility, four is a slight possibility. But they're going to get three teams in the tournament. You know, if you get four, that's awesome. But three alone, hang your hat on that. I think there's some very, very, very good hockey being played there. And I think that you should. My expectation is we're going to see Minnesota State play Michigan Tech for the championship game. I kind of hope that that's what happens, because I think that those teams have been the most consistent teams the entire year. And I think that's a great battle on a final night in this tournament. I don't know. I really hope that the Xcel gets a crowd. That's a little bit of a concern for me, that they're playing back there. I hope they get a nice crowd, because these teams have played some good hockey. They deserve to play in front of a big crowd for their crowning event.
Well, that's all going on this weekend. And a reminder, USCHO.com will have live blogs at all six of the conference playoffs, and you can follow along there. Before we wrap up, I want to remind you not to get left out in the cold this spring. Be There as the best of the best. We'll compete for the title of national champion. Experience the NCAA Men's Frozen Four. Regional action drops the puck March 27th through 29th. Continues April 9th and 11th at the Frozen Four in Boston. Experience it live as determination will make history. Visit ncaa.com/frozen4 to make a date with champions. Couple of quick notes. Check out the pairwise predictor at uscho.com. Play around with some scenarios. Find out whether your team can make it in with certain combinations. Also on Sunday, it's Selection Sunday. The show on ESPN2, I believe, will be at noon. 11:30 will be live with a live blog here at uscho.com. And have our commentary and updates on that all throughout the afternoon. So I hope you can check all of that out from us here at uscho.com. Jim, final thoughts?
Well, I think you're calling a playoff series this weekend, or a playoff game at least, and looking for a championship. I'm in the same position, so I wish you and RIT the best of luck as they head out to what should be a pretty great atmosphere there in Rochester.
Well, and same with UMass Lowell. It was interesting. It was a treat this season to be able to have those teams match up so that we could run into each other on the road.
Always fun to actually connect in person, because we do this show. Not a lot of people realize, but we do it from two different studios in two very different states and two very different geographic regions. So it's nice to be in the same city, and I hope we'll definitely be in the same city for a Frozen Four, maybe a regional before then would be a lot of fun.
Well, we'll wrap it there. For Jim Connolly, I'm Ed Trefsker, and we'll hope you catch us next Tuesday for USCHO Live.